Yeah, yeah. I like what you just said about kind of doing this together. And one thing that I will say is the people that we've talked to with our hundreds of interviews that have been successful are pharmacists that are doing this collaboratively with other pharmacists. This is too hard to figure out by yourself. So there are resources. There's NASPA, there's some other resources. There's also us though. We have a network of motivated, innovative pharmacies that are serious about figuring this out at scale, meaning they're trying to figure out all the problems, the marketing, the regulatory, the workflow together. And our pharmacy teams, they meet together on a weekly basis. It's super awesome. And we're trying to get to the future of pharmacy together. And we basically, Script Health or Scriptit.co, we're just in the background and they tell us what to do and we listen to them.
Welcome to the Pharmacy Quality Solutions Quality Corner Show, where quality measurement leads to better patient outcomes. This show will be your go-to source for all things related to quality improvement and medication use in healthcare. We will hit on trending health topics as they relate to performance measurements and find common ground for payers and practitioners. We will discuss how the Equip platform can help you with your performance goals, and we will also make sure to keep you up to date on pharmacy quality news. Please note that the topics discussed are based on the information available at the date and time of recording. Information or guidelines are updated periodically, and we will always recommend that our listeners research and review any guidelines that are newly published. Buckle up and put your thinking cap on. The Quality Corner Show starts now.
Hello, Quality Corner Show listeners. Welcome to the PQS podcast, where we focus on medication use, quality improvement, and how we can utilize pharmacists to improve patient health outcomes. I'm your host, Nick Dorich, and on the episode today, we are discussing how or why pharmacists should be utilized with the role of prescribing, initiating, or managing medications. We all know that pharmacists are the medication experts. In various settings, and sometimes due to specific protocols, pharmacists are permitted to prescribe or manage a patient's medication actively. However, this is not a service that is widespread or accepted with every practice setting or by every practitioner. We're going to talk about that topic today, and our guest is James Lott. James is a pharmacist by background, and he is the founder of Scriptit.co by Script Health. James, welcome to the PQS Quality Corner Show, and how are you doing today?
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Nick. I am doing very well. It's Friday.
It is. Yes, our date of recording, it is Friday. It's Friday afternoon. So we might be a little bit more excited on this, not just because it's Friday afternoon on our day and time of recording, but also because of the topic. I know that for both of us as pharmacists, this is something that we're both very passionate about. So I'm excited for the episode. But before we get to the content of today's episode, James, we need to know about you. So what is your background in pharmacy? What's your background in healthcare? And then what exactly is it that you do now?
Yeah, thanks, Nick. So as you mentioned, I am a pharmacist by training. My background specifically is in public policy and public health. I was a community pharmacist for several years, and I absolutely loved my job. I really did. It really just touched my heart to be able to shape communities and keep people healthy and build relationships with patients. I was serious about that. I was not the best student, as my classmates, if any of you guys are listening, you definitely know what I'm talking about. But I was really passionate about the practice of pharmacy. So much so that after doing a big stint in pharmacy, I went back to grad school. I studied public policy and I just caught the entrepreneurial bug. I wanted to use all of my experiences and all of my knowledge to push the profession forward. And while being in grad school, we had that opportunity. I went to the University of Chicago. There was a business competition there, which became famous because the company Grubhub had won it and kind of accelerated off, and the university invested in them. And then we were finalists in the same competition, and I kind of got to leverage business skills and mix it with pharmacy practice. And you know, now we're here with Scriptit.
Excellent. Well, James, you and I, we're not going to compare our transcripts from college and from pharmacy school, but I suspect that you and I were probably pretty similar in those clinical classes. At least I'll say for myself, solid C plus B minus student in those classes. But health systems and health operations, pharmacy law, pharmacy ethics. I was an A student in those classes. I think you too. And I. Okay, so we're much in the same. We share that in common. Excellent. All right. Well, James, we're going to get to our conversation today. But before we do, we're going to be right back with the questions after we hear the breakdown.
Now it's time for the breakdown. As Quality Corner show host, Nick will ask three main topic questions. Our guests will have a chance to respond, and there will be some discussion to summarize the key points. This process will repeat for the second and third questions, which will wrap up the primary content for this recording. After that, expect to end on a closing summary, usually containing a bonus question. Now that we have described the process, let's jump into the questions.
James, our first question always focuses on the issue at hand, and today that topic is pharmacist and prescribing. We have to address what is the problem to be solved. When looking at the topic of pharmacist prescribing and managing medications, we are trying to solve a problem with the healthcare system at large today. What are the primary issues you see, and then why is the pharmacist a solution that can be implemented? How does that help improve patient access, and how does that provide a cost-effective approach?
Well, you know, I think that's a great question, specifically because people in who are probably not, you know, in the pharmacy practice are using this buzzword, the future of pharmacy. And what does it look like? Well, I've thought a lot about the future of pharmacy. To me, the future of pharmacy is very hard to get to because nobody has any idea what that actually means. It's like the question is like, better questions might be, who is advocating for this future of pharmacy? Who's the leader in implementing these things? And who has the plan to get there? I would also argue, because yesterday, President Biden announced that he would like to implement test and treat nationally, which means that pharmacists can potentially test a patient for COVID-19. And then if they show up positive, the pharmacist can prescribe one of these life-saving drugs like Paxlovid or Molnupiravir. But again, the question is like, how is this being implemented? Are pharmacists ready for this? What's the incentive for the pharmacist? These are things that we spent a lot of time answering, and we've heard a lot of feedback. I think personally, I'm just mostly concerned with the lack of a plan. And that's why scripted.co actually exists today.
Excellent. So James, let me ask this question. Where did this idea of pharmacist prescribing start from, right? There's been other examples of this occurring. So it's not as if it's necessarily a new or novel topic, but we're looking to apply it to a broader audience, correct?
Yeah. No, it kind of occurred when I was a pharmacist. So I worked in a kind of interesting community. I worked in a very diverse community, and I noticed something. A lot of my patients, they were not insured, and they would come to the pharmacy first to get care. It made my job really exciting because we got to practice a lot of our clinical skills. We did more in over-the-counter sales at our pharmacy than we did in behind the counter because there were so many people, you know, kind of leveraging these. And, you know, there was one experience where this gentleman, he came into the pharmacy. He didn't have insurance. He knew he just needed an asthma inhaler because he had an exacerbation recently, or he's been having some exacerbations. And I told him, hey, I'm sorry, you know, there's not much good over the counter. And he's like, well, I can't go to a doctor. So do you have anything? And I referred him to some epinephrine. On his way there, he was walking to the aisle and he just collapsed. So I was a misbehaving pharmacist. I grabbed a albuterol from behind the counter. I'd administered it to him and it saved his life. But a better question might be, you know, what I did was technically illegal and I probably could have got fired, but why? That's stupid. This gentleman knows what he has. He's ready to pay. He's ready to pay for it if he could. He just couldn't go to the ER and he didn't have a primary care doctor. This is a perfect example of when a pharmacist could potentially step in and provide care. And our platform helps exactly with that, those types of scenarios.
Excellent. Yeah, I think this is something where I have spent some time from my pharmacy practice speaking with folks that are international, outside of the United States, right? Other countries, there's many services where a patient can get that service done at a pharmacy, and international travelers, when they're here in the US, they may expect for things like a simple UTI or that may be related to asthma, getting a rescue inhaler, right? Where there may be certain examples where they can just get this, you know, go to a pharmacy, speak with a pharmacist, get and have these medications prescribed, they can have them filled. And we're going to get into it a little bit more, some of those disease states that may be good targets and why they're appropriate. We certainly know, James, you and I know, having graduated pharmacy school around the same time, that pharmacists have an immense amount of clinical training. So there are going to be some checks and balances that go into that part, but this is certainly within the scope, right, of a pharmacist's knowledge. Now, I do want to move us to our next section. And pharmacist prescribing, this may not be applicable for every disease state, for every care setting, or for every patient, right? We've already referenced that. There's going to be some examples where it's going to work out really well, and this can be an accessible way for patients to receive care. Much progress related to pharmacist prescribing has been focused on specific disease states, and then going actually from each state, you know, each state in the United States where there are differences. So can you walk us through, are there current opportunities maybe with regards to specific states in the U.S. that are seeing progress on this? And then are there certain practice settings or disease states where this can be largely applicable and where we've seen success?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to first educate the audience on something. I agree completely where in other countries this is kind of a thing, but it's actually a thing again in the United States. And in some states, they've been able to prescribe since the 1970s. So why hasn't this been normalized? The answer is because it's hard, and because typically, pharmacists, we don't always work so well together to kind of accomplish some of our hard problems. Now, some of the states that we like to look to, the best textbook case would be Idaho. Idaho in 2017 passed some policies that allowed them to prescribe for common ailments, is what they call it. And they've since expanded that law because the program has gone fairly well, that pharmacists in Idaho, as long as they are trained and knowledgeable about a medication, they have full prescriptive authority to do that. Now, the next question is, okay, if you have prescriptive authority, I would want to leverage this as soon as possible. But the next problem is payments. If I am a prescribing pharmacist, I am taking some sort of reliability, and I would want to be paid for my service so that I am protected and also that, you know, there is value in what I am doing because I'm saving this patient a visit or a trip to the doctor. So these are things that we have to consider. And at scale, you know, I think that it's probably in the best interest for pharmacists to be doing the same services. And that's where kind of the problems lie. What we've seen talking to hundreds of pharmacists nationwide is that they are mostly going about this by themselves. They're using paper processes. There are not workflows. And you have issues with confidence. You have issues with training your staff to do it. We haven't taken this seriously enough to scale this. But that's why we came up with Scripted.co. If it's okay, I'd love to tell you about the first transaction on our platform and how it actually took place.
Yeah, go ahead, James.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. So in one of our pharmacies, there was a 41-year-old woman who went to her local doctor's office. She knew she had a urinary tract infection, and she just went to the doctor without an appointment. Once she got there, the doctor actually said, "I'm sorry, we can't see you today. You're going to have to wait for about 3 weeks." And like most Americans, she was bummed, but she went to her local pharmacy, picked up some Azo from over the counter, brought it to the pharmacy and said, "Hey, is this helpful for my UTI?" And the pharmacist was like, "Nah, not really, but we just signed up for this program called Scripted. Why don't you go ahead and scan this QR code here? You're going to answer some questions about your condition. And if you're eligible, I can write you a prescription for an effective antibiotic." The patient completed the form. The pharmacist logged into her Scripted account, was able to use clinical decision support, which guided her through the process to review to make sure that that patient was in fact eligible or needed to be referred to a local physician. Took some notes, and the patient was a candidate. She wrote her a prescription for 5-day carcimacrobid, charged her a couple of bucks for the visit, billed her medication to her insurance, and the patient went on her way. It was very seamless for both the patient and the pharmacist. And the pharmacist felt good and was ready for this kind of thing. Instead of having to go off the top of her head and be stressed out, about the visit. She had tools to help support this and document it. And our question is, this was a good win-win for everybody. How can we expand this type of story or this type of access to care to every zip code in the United States for these common conditions?
Yeah. So James, I've got one question comes to mind here, because you'd mentioned already states like Idaho. We've had on some recent podcasts, folks from Iowa, typically states that are more rural where they need providers, right? Because it is there's greater distances between where the patient lives and, you know, their hospital, their care setting, et cetera. Part of my mind, and I don't know with your first example where exactly this occurred, but services like this could be just as useful in more urban and more highly populated areas, right? Where just because an area is more highly populated doesn't mean that there's necessarily more access to a provider, particularly in areas where you may have folks that work at, you know, different hours of the day, that are working night shifts and they're sleeping during the day. They can't go and see a provider during typical 9-to-5 office hours. So do you have any experience as to where you see this expanding? And is this something that is equally applicable, whether it be that urban or rural setting?
It is 100% applicable and 100% necessary. If we talk about scale, meaning that, you know, this is something that becomes normalized and this is something that becomes commonplace at every pharmacy, you know, we could have similar results to what we saw with vaccines. Over the pandemic, pharmacists have given over 229 million vaccines, and that data is from a month ago, so it's probably gone up since then, and over 100 million COVID tests. Imagine the world, imagine America today without pharmacists at just about every pharmacy not administering vaccines. We would probably still be in line today to do that. Now, the problem is normalizing it. We've heard lots of things from executives from large chains and other folks for reasons or rationales why they can't do this. Again, a lot of it comes back to, you know, the things that you need to do. You got to get pharmacists trained up on this. They have to have the workflow down. They need to be supported, especially busy community pharmacies in these urban areas with high traffic. They have to have the time to do that. If they're the only pharmacist for a 12-hour shift and they don't have the tools, it's not going to happen. And so one thing I'll say to the executives listening to this is a new stream of revenue, and it's margin, is profit margin, as we are kind of racing to the bottom right now with declining reimbursements on prescriptions. This could be the savior. Doing 3 to 5 of these a day at every pharmacy leads to hundreds of dollars in additional revenue, which can offset the margins, make the pharmacist feel more confident in what they're doing and like they're practicing at the top of their license. The only thing that the executives need to do is make sure that our pharmacists are supported and staffed and trained for this, and they're given the tools to be successful.
Yeah. So James, I'm going to move us to our last question, because I want us to focus on what are some of the barriers, because for further implementation and making this, as I think about it, it should be or could be a standard of practice where somebody walking into a pharmacy and in the right case, in the right instances, having a pharmacist prescribe or initiate a medication. You already mentioned immunizations, right? So COVID-19 immunizations, right? That was an easy one. We've seen that flu, but there's other immunizations we know based on, you know, adult guidelines where those can be applicable. We've seen in various states that there are certainly opportunities for some simple infections. You mentioned, you know, UTI. There's also could be similar simple respiratory infections where it could be applicable for either an antiviral, right, or an antibiotic. Other things that we are seeing a number of states, even in North Carolina, where I'm located, where pharmacists now can initiate, birth control for women. There's a screening process. There's clinical decision making that needs to go with it, but that can happen. So, James, my question for you here, what do we need to address? I would have to imagine that there's going to be three kind of key areas. Some of it's going to be regulatory, right? We need to remove some barriers there. We do need to address pharmacy or pharmacist education and support. I would add probably pharmacy technician, right? Technician isn't going to be doing this, but technicians are probably going to be doing a lot of this, the support paperwork to complete some of this. And then the other aspect is also, you've referenced this already, but payment. But anything you want to walk us through as it goes to those elements and how we really get this to be a standard of practice?
Yeah, there's a lot of, this conversation could go for an entire hour. We At Script Health, we have a lot of data surrounding this. For independent pharmacies, we've noticed a lot of them are willing to take the risk because they want to kind of just be trailblazers in here, and they're doing it and they just kind of find a way. But for our chains, they're hesitant to do it because everything kind of starts with reimbursements. Most folks are not willing to make the investment that you'll need to train and take the risk, the regulatory risk for thousands of pharmacists to do this. So, but the top reasons today why this has not scaled and become a process is, I would say top two reasons are, number one, regulatory, and number two are reimbursements. And then there's lots of operational things as number three. But the regulatory, you have 50 states, 50 different varying practice scopes of pharmacists, from outright prescriptive authority like Idaho, to where some states you can partner with the physician and do a collaborative practice agreement so that you can prescribe, but the physician might only be able to monitor 5 to 7 pharmacists. So you'd have to have, like, you know, 100 physicians in the state to do this at scale. It can be pretty complex. And then the next one, again, is reimbursements, because of the fact that pharmacists are not providers federally recognized, it makes it hard to get reimbursements. And with the time and the liability, I completely get that. And that's what we're working on. Now, something that folks might not be aware of, I get to have conversations with the VPs at these insurance companies. They want this to happen. It's just healthcare is just that complicated, but they want this to happen. But I think that they want varying degrees of that these types of programs are going to be successful as well. And it's kind of like a chicken or egg problem. So we have to figure that out. But if I'm a pharmacist in a community setting, I'm thinking, okay, like, this sounds cool, but am I trained, and is this another metric that I'm going to have to be responsible for? In my opinion, I think that's the best and most fair question for pharmacists to ask. I do want pharmacists to know, though, that this definitely needs to happen, but we have a part, and our part is to be ready for it. But our employers have a part, because they need to make sure that we're set up for success. So we have to do this, but I understand that we definitely need support from our employers.
Yeah, I would add with this, Jameson, this is something we've touched on already. You know, your first example, right, where patients, they need to have access to providers. And we've known for years there's shortages of other healthcare providers. So there's an opportunity for pharmacy to step up. The other note here that I would add as it relates to it, and where folks can look, because you may or may not know based on your state, what is allowed? Is this something that you've already have an effect that you just need to implement and work with local payers so you can, you know, bill for that coverage, et cetera? Or if this is in a state where you need to take the route that Idaho and other states have gone, NASPA, the National Alliance of State Pharmacy Associations, we've had guests from their team on the show before. They've got great resources on what's allowed or even just what bills are going through in local state legislature. So would definitely recommend, you know, you check with NASPA resources, or you check with your local state pharmacy association, see what efforts they already have underway. We are certainly all kind of stronger together in that regard than trying to figure it out on our own. But we've got work to do. James, appreciate you walking us through about what's going on, opportunities for pharmacist prescribing, and appreciate you giving us some information based on your background, your experience. Hope to have those efforts continuing so we can have pharmacists, as you said, practicing at the top of their license. Any other thoughts you want to give before we jump into our tangential questions at the end?
Yeah. I like what you just said about kind of doing this together. And one thing that I will say is the people that we've talked to with our hundreds of interviews that have been successful are pharmacists that are doing this collaboratively with other pharmacists. This is too hard to figure out by yourself. So there are resources. There's NASPA. There's some other resources. There's also us, though. We have a network of motivated, innovative pharmacies that are serious about figuring this out at scale, meaning they're trying to figure out all the problems, the marketing, the regulatory, the workflow, together. And our pharmacy teams, they meet together on a weekly basis. It's super awesome. And we're trying to get to the future of pharmacy together. And we basically, Script Health or Scripted.co, We're just in the background and they tell us what to do and we listen to them.
Easy enough. Thanks for adding that comment. All right, James, we're now at the part of our podcast where we've covered our main topic. We've covered pharmacist prescribing. We have a couple of different questions here at the end. We are a show about quality improvement in healthcare, but that also means our own quality improvement. How are we as individuals working to better ourselves and the world that we live and work in? So this is a three-part question for you. One, James, how do you track your personal or professional goals? Two, can you share one goal you're currently working on? And three, is there a goal you haven't yet started in this 2022 calendar year, but that you would like to start in the future?
All right. So number one, how do I track my personal or professional goals? I think I'm a very ambitious person. I'm actually trying to take my foot off the gas for professional goals. I think I've kind of been all in on that. Working hundreds of hours a week is not fun. So let's focusing on the personal. One goal I had for myself this year was to cook more. And I am happy to say before yesterday, I had cooked 95% of my meals for the last month. I am pretty happy with that. If I don't make it, I try not to eat it. And that feels really good. And that's also very easy to monitor. I know I can look myself in the mirror and know if I cooked or not. In terms of a goal that I have not yet started, again, like, you know, we're at a time, y'all, we're getting from the pandemic. People are, we've all been career, work. You know, it's time to give back to ourselves. So I'm taking that seriously. I am looking to either learn another language or be an amateur musician and play a chord on my acoustic guitar that I just got. So I am working on both. One of those things will happen. You know, we'll just see which one it is first.
Excellent. James, I appreciate your approach to this. It's always important for us. And to have that balance, right? A lot of people would say, what's that work-life balance? But sometimes we got to do the things that are helping us with the professional life, but we all have a life outside of work. And I appreciated you sharing for some of those things that are counting outside of work. When it comes to your cooked meals, I'm hoping or expecting that it's not just, you know, cooking white rice, that, you know, you're actually having some, you know, maybe some butter chicken. Are you trying any kind of specific meals? Do you mind expanding on that format? I can't leave you just with that, even having just that as your answer. What kind of food are you cooking
Nick
here?
The shade. We've talked about this. I'm from Louisiana, my friend. They would kick me out of the state. I mean, I guess I'm not in the state anymore, but they didn't kick me out. Yep, you know, yep. They didn't kick me out. I cook, my man. I cook. This morning I made like this crazy, they call it a skillet in Chicago. It had just all these veggies, well-seasoned, avocado toast on the side. You know, I go in, my friend, I go in. But I do need to brush up on my etouffee and my jambalaya. I haven't made those in a while, but maybe that's my challenge next.
No shade, my friend. This was trying to get inspiration for either me or as someone who was a former catering chef at a different point in life. Always interested to see what people are working on. James, appreciate having you on the show today. Before we let you go, we need to let people know where they can find you. So do you have a website? Do you have an email? Where, if people want to hear from you and about what Scripted is doing, where do they go?
Yeah, so just to put that one-liner in again, folks, like all this future pharmacy stuff, they've been talking about it for a while. If you want a turnkey solution to start prescribing in 1 to 2 weeks for common conditions, we have everything ready for you. Everything from workflow, scheduling, CPAs, and marketing material. We handle it all for the customers and for the pharmacists that are serious about, you know, doing this new work. It's all in one place. You can go to scripted.co, just like it sounds, scripted.co, or you can email us at info@scripthealth.co and we'll get you started.
Excellent. Well, James, thank you very much for joining on the show today and for talking with us about pharmacists and prescribing. With that, we have closed our episode. And for our listening audience, we hope you join us next week for another episode of the Quality Corner Show. Until then, we have one final message from the PQS team.
The Pharmacy Quality Solutions Quality Corner Show has a request for you. Our goal is to spread the word about how quality measurement can help improve health outcomes, and we need your help in sharing this podcast to friends and colleagues in the healthcare industry. We also want you to provide feedback, ask us questions, and suggest health topics you'd like to see covered. If you are a health expert and you want to contribute to the show or even talk on the show, please contact us. You can email info@pharmacyquality.com. Let us know what is on your mind, what we can address, so that you are fully informed. We want you to be able to provide the best care for your patients and members, and we wish all of you listeners out there well.